Hello, folks. Dr. Maurice Selby here, medical director, producer, and co-host of Health in Harlem on WHCR 90.3 FM and the Health in Harlem podcast. While we strive to bring you the most up-to-date, reliable, evidence-based information to help you live the healthiest life possible, this show does not substitute for an evaluation by a trained and licensed medical professional. It is highly recommended that any advice or recommendations on medications, treatments, nutrition, fitness, preventive services, etc., be implemented under the guidance and supervision of your primary medical provider or appropriate specialist. With that said, we hope that you enjoy and learn from our program, and please be sure to let us know how we can best serve you in future shows. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience. This is Dr. Mo Selby.
My name is Reed.
My name is Anastasia.
And you're listening to the one and only Health in Harlem on WHCR 90.3 FM New York, the voice of Harlem, and the Health in Harlem podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, it is American Heart Month. And so you probably guessed that is going to be a major topic of our discussion. But ladies and gentlemen, we're going to discuss heart disease in the context of being stressed out, man. And I'll give you the backstory to this because Maurice Donovan Selby right now is in the middle of a move. I wish we had video, but I'm glad we don't because I'd probably stress you out with the amount of boxes and particularly not just the boxes, but the unpacked things, the things that are not in the boxes. That's probably what's stressing me out right now. Looking at my desk right now, like, yo, I got to throw that in. And so I'm stressed out a little bit, but yes, it is American Heart Month, ladies and gentlemen. This is the leading cause of death of men, women, and really people of most racial and ethnic groups in the United States. Actually, we can even say around the world, one person dying every 36 seconds in the United States from cardiovascular disease. And, you know, we talk about COVID and everything that's happened up to this point, but 659,000 people in the United States dying each year. Right? That's one in four of every deaths each year. That's prior to COVID. And it could even be worse considering the circumstances right now. And so that's why we're going to talk about this. $363 billion on the table each year going to heart disease in this country. So we can already sort of see the massive problem. If anything, I probably stressed you out regarding these statistics. But that's why I think it's really important that we have this conversation tonight. How are you guys? Did I stress y'all out? I hope not.
I mean, we've talked about cardiovascular disease so much on the show. And, you know, we're just talking about another thing that contributes and is related to poor outcomes and health. You didn't stress me out because I know it's Health in Harlem. I know at the end there's going to be a turnaround where you're going to tell us, you know, what to do, but, you know, how to be happy and healthy and still continue living our happy, normal lives at the end. It's going to end on a positive
word. That's what I'm talking about, Reed. Thank you for that. And that's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. I think that as much as we can get bogged down in these big numbers, as much as we can be disheartened, you like that pun, right? By the facts before us, I think we can also at the same time be empowered from this information. And we're really what we're going to delve into. I mean, typically in the past, we've always talked about heart disease and cardiovascular disease in general, right? And the common risk factors, you know, the usual suspects, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, hyperlipidemia or increased triglyceride levels, smoking, increased use of alcohol, right? And even just some genetic factors, right? Family history and that how that contributes to heart disease. We've talked about that week in, week out in various forms. But when we talk about stress, when we talk about anxiety, depression, and its contribution to heart disease, I don't think we've had that conversation on this program. And frankly, you know, when we talk about those problems, we typically see it talked about from the sense of suicide and suicide prevention, right? The fallout that we see with major depressive disorder. decreased functionality that individuals can experience when we deal with, right, chronic anxiety, when we deal with stress responses. And so this is a new take, I think, in terms of talking about heart disease and even talking about stress, the physical manifestations, right, and the long-term stress, chronic stress, and how this relates to heart disease. This is a new discussion on Health in Harlem. But again, we're going to not only talk about bringing awareness to this, but also we're going to give you some very, I think, tangible tips and empower you going forward so that we can deal with this, right? So that I'll tell you what how I'm dealing with it in terms of dealing with these boxes behind me. So tell us about your 12-hour days, actually, Anastasia, because that's like, that's heavy duty right there.
Yeah, I haven't been on the show for a while because I'm working a lot. I work in clinical research and I also tutor. So I usually just have a 9-to-5. And then after that, I have to my students back to back almost every day. So it can get quite overwhelming, and it can get stressful in the sense that there's no time to decompress after a long day, because it's like I'm done with the day and it's like, oh, it's already nighttime, time to get ready for bed. And then you just wake up and do the whole process again. So that there's like that way of stress, because you have work stress. And then if you don't find, for me, like I need to find a way to decompress and calm down and like get my mind out of the work zone. So it's really bad. But I like to like decompress right after I'm done with my students. It's like once that clock hits, that's it. I'm not thinking about it anymore. So that definitely is one way that it helps me kind of, even though I work from home, right, which can really remove the boundaries between work and life. And that whole work-life balance can really go astray very easily if the same place that you have your own personal life becomes the place where you're stressed out about work. So having that mental and maybe physical boundary, even within your space, definitely helps me in terms of being able to deal with all the work that I have to do. It's stress inducing, but you know, you live with it and you work with it. I mean, we also live, we're also still dealing with COVID. So finding ways to reduce the doom scrolling of social media. That's definitely also one way, that I like kind of remove myself from stressors. This is off point, but you asked the question and I'm answering it.
So I think this is a big deal. And, you know, we've seen things around us in society relating to COVID, relating to some of the social tensions around us. We've seen, right, the CDC sort of bringing any attention to the rise in the number of overdose deaths. We've also seen, right, a number of individuals committing suicide. And we're talking about celebrities, right, having complications not only from suicide, but also, again, with the use of substances and having overdose deaths. But when we talk about what is happening in our bodies day in, day out with this chronic stress that we're dealing with, I think that's really what we need to delve into. And so you might be wondering, right, where does this mind-body connection sort of come into play? How does sort of stress cause problems with our heart? How does it cause problems with other parts of the body, other body systems, the nervous system, right? Even our GI system, you know, individuals that I've seen in the emergency department coming in with irritable bowel syndrome, right? Those symptoms acting up because of this chronic heightened stress. Well, when we think about stress, right, the response begins in the brain. This is something that is happening physiologically. We're experiencing it mentally, right, and how we feel, our emotions, but this is something that is very much grounded in our physical being, our physical selves.
Yeah.
And everything starts in the brain. When somebody confronts something, right, a threat to them potentially, if we even go back and sort of flashback in time, to our origins as the human species, right? Being chased by, you know, classic example, a saber-toothed tiger, we had a stress response. Actually, you can say it was quite an adaptive stress response because our brain, right, sensing or seeing this stimuli, this tiger that's chasing us, sends this information to our amygdala, which is sort of the fear stress response organ in the brain. And It also contributes to our emotional processing, right? Where it says, hey, this is a scary tiger chasing you. You need to do something fast, right? Which then interprets these images and sounds. And when it perceives this danger, the amygdala, it sends this distress signal to the sort of master organ, right? That coordinates our involuntary responses, the hypothalamus. And then that sends all sorts of signals throughout the body, leading to the release of epinephrine, right? Our adrenaline response that can increase our heart rate, increase our blood pressure, increase the blood flow to critical organs needed to get away from that danger. So our musculature, right? Our muscles, and we're able to respond. We're able to respond. We're able to get away from that threat. And in the normal state of things, once that threat is removed, we're able to come back down, right? Heart rate comes down, the blood pressure lowers, and then we can get back to sort of our usual state in which we can, right, sort of go on and begin to digest our food and carry on our normal bodily functions, right? But when we talk about that chronically heightened stress response, right? So the tiger is, in a way, always there, right? And that can be in the form of COVID-19 today. That can be in the form of chronic stress that we experience at work, especially being individuals that are working at home, right? Around the clock, that around the clock email ping that you get every couple of hours and thinking about what is at bay, right? What do we have to respond to?
There's a few Instagram videos where it's a corporate worker or someone that works from home will go to the therapist, and the therapist will be like, what's stressing you out? And their response will be like the Teams message or the Outlook message, the email like noise. So it'd be interesting. And like those videos will always be circulated around because after a while they do become stressful. Like it's nice and quiet, peaceful in your house and it's like ding, ding, ding. And you're just like, oh my God. But also you guys too, like even people that work in healthcare in almost every field, I feel like everyone is stressed out. I mean, it is New York City here. I mean, at least where I am and where Reed is. Dr. Selby isn't here right now, unfortunately. But he's also stressed out because he's moving.
I'm there in spirit.
Because he's moving though.
I'm there in spirit. Come on now. Okay. That's why I'm still on Health in Harlem. That's like my connection to New York will always be there.
No, people are always stressed out, you know, chronic stress is a real thing. I think that even in school, right, you're stressed out about homework, you're stressed out about your upcoming exams, you're stressed out about extracurricular activities so you can get to college, and even in college, to get to a good program for graduate school, wherever you want to go or career-wise, like, I feel like a stress is always something that's always there, at least in our society today. So, you know, chronic stress is a real thing.
Like Mo was saying that, you know, a little bit of stress is good. In fact, that's totally natural and totally normal. But when you have that extended level of stress, that's not great and can have really bad cascading health effects on the entire body. One example I want to bring up, not that it's stress, but it's very similar. A long, long time ago, I don't even think this was pre-podcast Health in Harlem. One of my favorite guests that we ever had on the show was Nora Bustany-Jost. And she had a microadenoma, so a little tiny tumor on her pituitary gland, which caused cyclical Cushing's syndrome, which is essentially a cyclical cycle of high cortisol levels released from her pituitary gland. Cortisol is normally released during stress, but since she had this tumor that was releasing it more often than she normally should, she had all sorts of cascading health effects all over her body. She was losing her eyesight. She was somewhat obese. She, you know, was at a very high elevated risk for heart disease or stroke. And so, you know, just something that she had totally no control over. But a similar thing happens in people with chronic levels of stress. They're releasing similar amounts of cortisol.
Yes, which can lead to, right? And this is where that mind-body connection really comes into play, because as we said, we talk about those risk factors, right? The traditional risk factors, and we talk about heart disease, high blood pressure. Well, guess what? A chronically heightened stress response where you have this basal level of cortisol that is floating around that it should not be there, right? Or at least in high levels, right? And we have that, we have a chance of having the blood pressure being increased. We have the chance of the heart rate even being increased, right? As we said, that tiger is always in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And so the heart rate is elevated chronically. The blood pressure is elevated chronically. We know that this can affect the way that we metabolize sort of the basic nutrients, right? How our increase, we can have increased levels of glucose floating around. We can hold on to and even store the fats that sort of hang around because of this heightened stress response. And that can lead to things like increased cholesterol levels, obesity, and really a lot of the cascading effects that Reed mentioned, even other organ systems being affected, such as atrophy, right? The brain, sort of beginning to sort of break down over time, right? So very, very real physical manifestations of this chronic,
your memory part.
Stress response. Yeah, the memory, exactly. And we know that there can be cognitive effects.
Your hippocampus.
Right, from, And so this is why it is very, very important. And I'm like thinking about it right now in our history on health in Harlem and how much we have talked about this topic. And really each and every year, right, we have a segment on heart disease to really mark American Heart Month. And I don't think we've been here yet to really talk about stress, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about anxiety, to talk about our moods, right? Depression, all of these very, very real things that I think we've sort of had a heightened awareness of because of things like COVID. But this is the time to talk about these topics.
True, yeah. And in the past, when we've talked about heart disease, we've said stuff like, hey, if you smoke, you know, you need to stop smoking. If you overeat, you need to eat healthier. And that's, you know, that works to an extent, but there's sort of like one step back. There's sort of a causation reason why you're smoking or why you're overeating. And a lot of the time that's stress. And so, yeah, it's great to be able to trace it back one step further and say, okay, you're stressed. You're at an increased risk for poor health behaviors, such as smoking, overeating, living a sedentary life, not exercising, etc. Maybe not even taking medications as you're prescribed to take them. All those different things, you know, that people who are with stress or depression, all those behaviors that they're going to do are going to, you know, increase their likelihood of cardiovascular disease all that much more.
Aside from sadness, there's also like the impact of loneliness. There have been studies that show like being lonely also increases your risk of having cardiovascular disease. So as Reed was saying, if you're depressed, you're going to do probably things that aren't great for you in the long run, right? Because with chronic stress, you don't feel it. Like if you're young and you're stressed out, then you can just relax and you'll be okay. But if you're constantly stressed out over you won't feel it maybe like the first day or the second day, but after a while, you start feeling the fatigue and all of the other symptoms, and it will start seeping into other aspects of your life that you might not think about. And it won't even seem like stress to you because you are so used to being in that constant state of heightened awareness, and your body is just ready to like attack or run away from the tiger, that you don't remember you might not remember what it's like to not be in that state. And so that might just also lead you to realize that maybe you are doing those unhealthy things that Reed mentioned as examples because you're just so used to it.
And I think that there are very tangible ways, ladies and gentlemen, in which we can manage this, right? And this is where really the good news comes into play, because as much as we are victims of everything that's sort of happening around us, there are things that we can do that have been tried and true strategies, tips that we have that can actually work to help us reduce stress levels. And as just as Reed said, right, when we talk about managing risk factors for heart disease, we typically categorize them, right, into things that we can control, right, versus risk factors that we cannot control. And so if we go back to, let's say, genetics, right, there are individuals out there that are predisposed to developing heart disease in many forms: coronary artery disease, heart failure, arrhythmias or abnormal heartbeats, right? Just because of their genome, their genetics, they can be predisposed to developing, right? Nothing we can do about that, unfortunately. We can modify some risk factors, right, to maybe reduce the chances of that happening to that individual. But because of their family history, they are at a higher risk of developing heart disease. But then we have things that we very well can control, right? And that has been the topic of our conversations previously. So smoking, not smoking, right? We can definitely control that risk factor. Using illicit substances, chief among them, things like cocaine, amphetamines that we know very well can damage the heart, right? We can stop that. Things like high blood pressure and eating, right? Or exercising. I mean, big proponents of that. There are things that we can do to mitigate that risk. And just as we can modify those risk factors, there are things that we can do to manage our stress and therefore reduce our risk of developing heart disease. And so that's where I want to focus our attention from this point on, ladies and gentlemen, because that is going to be the key, sort of how we manage stress in our lives, how we manage our mood in our lives. We do have things that we can control and that we can really, I think, get a better handle on this and not only reduce our risk of heart disease, right? But even when we talk about improving our quality of life, that's where I think we really have an opportunity. And so we'll just get right into that, right? There is a concept, ladies and gentlemen, where essentially some of the things that we deal with in our lives, there's a critical difference between how we view things, right? And that can determine our response to stressors in society. And basically, it is challenge and threat responses, right? Challenge versus threat. Essentially, whenever we're confronted with a challenge in our lives, so me packing the boxes that I know are right behind me, I'm like, right? Immediately after we're done recording, I am going to work. I'll probably be up for a few hours. And so, yeah, I can look at this, right? And think of this, hey, this is a threat, right? These boxes around me, I got these things that are like hard to pack. I got, I wish we had cameras. I got like a little nip. It's a Long Island iced tea. I got it from a guy on the train here in Georgia. So I keep this. This is like a memento. I was coming home late from work one night and there's just me and this other guy on a train. And he was running up the stairs. We had to run. It's a weird thing that they do with the trains here. Sometimes you won't notice. You just have to know, having lived here for a while. So the train will come on the opposite track, right? It's unidirectional when they're doing repairs or something. And there's no notice around. So anyway, long story short, I was hip to the game, right? I caught on after missing the train a couple of times, like on late nights. And so this other guy, I had to, as the train was pulling in, because I had just got there, and I'm like, yo, you got to come around. He runs up the stairs and makes it onto the train. I held the doors for him, like New York style, blocked the doors and stuff, and he made the train. We're like, yes, we did it. Good. And he gave me, he's selling these things and gave me this. On a train. So this is like my memento and I have to pack it, right? I'm not going to just drink this or throw it away.
So anyway, expecting you to say that this was in New York City, because this sounds like something that is a typical day in New York City, though.
I bought my New York City flavor. That was a train tale down here in
Definitely
Georgia.
Did.
But it is a New York City tale. I got so many, you know, running for the train stories. But right, I got to pack this. So challenge versus threat. Yes, I got these threat of the boxes around me, but I can look at it as a threat, right? And my, as we said, cortisol levels go up. Also, just thinking about the things down the line, moving into this new place and the things that we have to get established. And yes, that's very real, right? Could be a threat in terms of just really tackling, you know, this task before me and getting all of this stuff packed and ready for our movers tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., or I can look at this as a challenge, right? And something that I'm like, hey, I know this is going to be difficult. It's going to be a long night, but I'm up to the task and we're going to make it happen. This is a challenge before me. And that can drastically change how you respond, right, in terms of this stressor before us. It can drastically change our stress response and achieve very different physiologic outcomes, right? When we talk about things like our blood pressure being elevated in this stressed state, right? When we talk about the heart rate being elevated, there are ways in which we can mitigate that those changes by how we look at the threat before us. And even if it comes down to, right, some of the exercises to face this challenge before me, there are things that we can do in the moment that have been proven, right, to mitigate those responses. And so one of them is actually our breathing, right? Being conscious of our breathing, being conscious of our physical state before us, how we're feeling sort of in the moment. And we can actually bring attention to our breathing. And one exercise that I've learned is to breathe 4 seconds in, hold it for 4 seconds, and breathe out for 4 seconds, right? So when you're feeling that pent up stress, the boxes before me, I got to pack this nip. those are some of the strategies we can implement, and you can actually feel the decrease in your heart rate, right, when you do that. And this is just sort of a natural response, a physiologic response for our body. We focus on our breathing, we can bring down our heart rate. We could begin to, right, look at the task before us in that frenzied state where we're looking at it as a threat, right? The blood pressure is high, the heart rate is high, and we're trying to grasp, like, what should I pack next? What am I going to do with this and that? Right. But when we take that second and focus on how we're feeling, right, the challenge before us, not the threat before us, but the challenge before us, then we can begin to regulate that physiologic response, regulate that heart rate, regulate that. Let's say it in order, right? Regulate that breathing rate. We regulate that heart rate, and then we regulate our response to that challenge. Where we can think more clearly, we can have more control, more command over our body as we go forward. And then, right, we actually begin to arm ourselves and be able to tackle that challenge and achieve the outcome that we desire, which is me having all of this stuff packed by 8 a.m.
Yeah, I see it right now. Health in Harlem, website exclusive Dr. Selby breathing exercise. I can hear it right now. Just breathe.
It's not my
four
exercise,
seconds.
But I can't now think release of who this credit right now. Seconds.
Now we can begin to confront the problem in front of us. Think of it not as a problem, but as a challenge. Oh, man, I would pay such good money for that.
Yo, you're a character. Again, I am not taking credit for that, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, in the show notes, I will find, right, try to find the originator of these techniques. But these are tried and true techniques based, right, heavily based in psychology and in the science, where we can actually have command over our stress response and therefore achieve the outcome. And this is something that, right, not only do I practice here in this room, right, that we got to pack all of these boxes, but in my day-to-day working as an emergency physician in one of the busiest emergency departments in the country, right, this is how I manage my stress, right? Everything from dealing with difficult patients, right, and trying to come to a consensus on how we're going to treat and evaluate those patients when they're not having their best days, to dealing with people that are critically ill, right? There are moments where I have to step back, engage my response to the situation. Is this a threat? Is this a challenge, right? And when we get into that challenge mode, then we begin to use these strategies to manage that stress so that we can rise to the occasion and manage the situation at hand. And it's as simple as some of these things, right? Being mindfulness of how I'm feeling, my response, controlling how I respond to the situation, because how I respond can also affect how others respond to me, right? If I'm out here stressed out and in the house, oh my God, we got to pack all of this stuff. And, my wife gets stressed, Christine, and then she stresses me out more. And it's a, right, cascading effects from there in terms of us ramping each other up versus us pulling back and saying, okay, we got this. We've been through situations like this before, right? Let's work this out. How are we going to attack this together? Those things, and focusing on those simple things, as we said, even our breathing when it comes to dealing with these challenges before us, then we can really begin to have command over our lives and the challenges before us.
Absolutely. And, this isn't something that you have to do on your own, just figuring out breathing exercises and stuff. You know, you can take it a step further. You can seek out help. You can ask for help. You can go to a psychiatrist, go to a therapist. I was reading an article that Anastasia sent in the group, in our little group chat. And one thing that I saw that was really interesting was that people who are hospitalized after a coronary event, those that started on an SSRI, which are general spectrum medications for, anxiety and depression, but those who were started on an SSRI after they were hospitalized for a cardiac event had significantly lower rates of rehospitalization in the next 6 months than those who were not started on an SSRI. So, I mean, that just goes to show how big of a difference it can make seeking out treatment and attacking it, not just from the physical standpoint, but also from the mental and emotional standpoint as well.
Therapy is amazing if you have the resources and obviously access to it. There is no shame in getting help, professional help. These people are trained in order to help regular people like us know how to effectively deal with our stressors. Because as we mentioned before, there are some things like, you know, we can take a step back, but some stressors we can control because they're on the individualistic level. And some stressors are much bigger problems. They're on the systematic level, and we need to deal with all of them. So professionals like therapists, psychiatrists, you know, if you are someone that wants to also view medication as a treatment option, or just psychologists and therapists that can teach you use different behavioral therapy methods to help you learn coping mechanisms, right? They help you teach the toolkits, increase your tools that help you better deal and cope with stress. Like there's no harm in that. There's no shame in that. There's also a lot of lines you can call. There's a lot of helplines that you can call if you are in momentary states of really, really heightened anxiety or really, really heightened stress, that can help walk you through and out of that just super sharp, stressful moment that you're having. But however, unfortunately, in an ideal world, everyone would get therapy. I will talk forever about how everyone should get therapy at least once in their life. But unfortunately, not everyone has access to it. You know, other small things. I know a few people that meditation has really helped them a lot because it was very readily accessible. Obviously, there is a learning curve. I had to learn how to meditate properly when I first started out. But once you actually learn how to do it, and the fact that it is free and accessible, and it doesn't take up too much time if you are a very busy person, that is also one other thing that you can do in order to just physically decrease the symptoms of when you are in a heightened stressful state, as Dr. Selby mentioned before. I'm also very pro taking a step back, because once you're in that very stressful and heightened, very anxious state, because I get really anxious sometimes. I have a lot of anxiety at certain situations, and I have to realize that this is just me freaking out. And there is a way, there are steps. I know I have tools in my toolkit to how to decrease this anxiety and how to decrease the stress. When you are, you know, especially with COVID, because I am high risk, I'm still high risk. So seeing the data stresses me out. Having to coordinate and do risk mitigation when I go see my friends to overcome the stress from loneliness, right? That's also something that I have to deal with. So all of these things can take a toll. So having an adequate coping skills and having things that are healthy and work for you, right? For some people, writing helps them. I have a friend that has like 20 journals because she just writes her feelings down and it helps her calm down. And I'm like, props to you, but that I is can't awesome. Do that. I definitely can't do that. But like she can because she's a writer and that's her outlet. But the point
maybe is podcasting for some people, right?
Is that you?
Where... Well, I think it is because I feel better already with the situation before me and packing all this stuff. And you would think that, hey, this is going to stress you out even more because you have the same work that you had before starting this, right? I have this challenge before me immediately after we're done. But one thing that I can say that is beneficial is that this, for me personally, and again, I'm glad you brought that up, Anastasia, and that everybody's different, right? And this is not only a stress reducing activity for me because I get to talk, right, not only with you both, but also the listening audience about how I deal with challenges in my life. And even I come to solutions about those challenges, right, just from having the conversations on here on the program. But also one thing that I know about myself going forward is that, right, not producing Health in Harlem, not coming on the show and having this done, right? This is another thing that would be on the plate for tomorrow. And so to mitigate the stress going forward, this is one of those things that we had to do in order to mitigate stress, right? And decrease the stress responses going forward. Sometimes, right? How we not only look at the challenges or the, I don't want to say obstacles placed before us, but looking at the challenges before us, right? Strategizing and how we deal with those challenges also can be very helpful. So something that we might table to another time, maybe it is better from a stress management standpoint, dealing with that in the right near term and getting that done, we might benefit going forward, right? And so not procrastinating, yeah, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Sort of going back to what Anastasia was saying earlier and sort of taking off on a new note, but it's not just stress that's related to high occurrences of cardiovascular disease. It's all sorts of mental disorders, all sorts of mood disorders, depression, anxiety, bipolar, PTSD. Like all those different things. And so, sure, stress is something that you can modify. But if you have one of these disorders, then it's not necessarily something that you can modify. And so, again, mm-hmm. seeking out help, like we said, if you're obese and you want to lose weight, you start going to the gym. What do you think is better to start going to the gym? Just going to the gym and making things up as you go, or hiring yourself a personal trainer to work on a routine with you, work on it in a more holistic way? So same as you would get yourself a personal trainer, go ahead and get yourself a therapist or a life coach or, you know, some kind of professional in that capacity to assist you in your journey. Because a lot of the positive mental characteristics that are considered lower risk for cardiovascular diseases are things that are tools that we can have in our toolkit, like practicing gratitude and practicing mindfulness, finding a sense of purpose and satisfaction in life, all those things. So again, those are just tools that can be honed with a lot of professional help as well.
One of the things that it's awful, and I wish we weren't in COVID, right? But the push towards telemedicine, I think, mm-hmm. has increased the accessibility to these kinds of professionals that can help us, and everyone that might suspect that they do have some sort of mental disorder. You know, it having that ability to not have to leave a place that you find safe, such as your home, to access these resources is also great. I know that there's probably a lot of resources online too that are free, because mm-hmm. not everyone, a lot of psychiatrists in New York do not accept insurance plans, so they can really run up a bill.
Yep.
So finding the resources that can help you with that, whether it's free or reduced cost, a lot of them do scaled, like based on your income. So, you know, you do have a scaled paying system. Just mm-hmm. being able to find them, even if they aren't like with an office. I know that there's something called Cerebral that a lot of people have been using, which is a monthly mm-hmm. subscription kind of thing where you get a counselor and a psychiatrist and you talk to them monthly. So there's a lot of different routes that you can take to get the professional help that you think you need. There was something else I was going to say, but I forgot.
New York City, you are, right? Very, very fortunate. And there are resources like this, Anastasia is correct, around the country. Because this is Health in Harlem, right? I'll give you some of those resources in New York City. And one that is very, very, very powerful, ladies and gentlemen, is NYC Well. You can speak with a counselor at any time. You can chat online on the NYC Well website. You can also call 888-NYC-WELL, right? That's 888-692-9355 to speak with a counselor. They speak English, Spanish, Chinese, interpretation services available for other languages as well, and over 200 languages actually, right? This is a resource that I think we all really could benefit from, especially if, as we said, you're having difficulty reaching a professional, right? Or having difficulty yeah. accessing a professional. You definitely want to take advantage of those services.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Finding a mental health professional can be ridiculously tough and honestly quite a stressful process in itself. Once you get to that point and you've started that journey, you know, you either get to the point where you put in some effort, the tiger's chasing you, you see a professional, and hopefully, you know, the tiger's not chasing you anymore, or the tiger just keeps chasing. And so it might be a lot of stress up front dealing with all these different doctors, seeing who takes your insurance, booking an appointment, where the only available appointment is a month and a half out from the date that you book it. It's a very stressful process, but in the end, it will be fruitful.
Right, because we're talking about chronic stress. Not to cut you off, Dr. Selby. So we're talking about chronic stress, right? Because we are going to be placed in a situation where we do need our stress levels to go up in order to overcome the situation. But with chronic stress, right, that's the whole point, is that we're talking about how chronic stress can severely impact your physical health in many ways, which our focus for tonight is our cardiovascular health, right? So in order to prevent to get to that point, we unfortunately have to go through the stressful process of finding the mental health professional for us. And right, you have to get the rapport and everything. But putting in the work will have, it's like a long-term investment, right? You want to have yourself to be as healthy as possible as you get older, because as we get older, we naturally will not be as healthy as we are when we're like 15. So putting in the effort now to help ourselves in the future is definitely something that, you know, I want to do, and I know a lot of people want to do. So if we can take the precautions now, preventative health is always, you know, my personal
opinion. I like preventative maintenance. It's like driving a car. If that oil change light goes on, sure, you can keep driving it, but it's going to reduce the length of time in which that car will be usable for you. Preventative maintenance makes all the difference, especially when we talk about public health and the money that it costs the government in bills and hospital bills and individuals and bills. You know, it's a lot cheaper if you get preventative maintenance than, you know, to deal with issues as they come up.
There's also one other thing, support groups, right? Like your community can also be a great source for you to help deal with chronic stress and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people you can turn to talk to. You know, it could be your family, it could be your friends, it could be your faith. Church is definitely a community that some people turn to in order to seek support when you are stressed out or when you're anxious or when you're just going through a situation that seems to prolong itself, right? So also having that, you know, in case you're on the process of finding a therapist and you haven't done it yet because your appointment is 2 months away, you have other ways and other resources available to you. Because, you know, everyone needs a support system. Even if you have therapy, your therapist shouldn't be your only person of contact. Everyone needs a support system so that you help each other out when you are undergoing all of these situations that can be stressful, anxiety inducing, or if you just, you know, if you have PTSD and you have a flashback, you know, you have someone you can contact to help you through it.
Absolutely. And just some additional tips, ladies and gentlemen, that I think can really be beneficial. We're going to focus on two big areas. And one is our emotional resilience, right? In terms of helping us really, really fortify ourselves so that when things get tough, and they will, right? There will be times where the stress can feel overwhelming, right? We can have, or at least build our capacity, build our resilience so that we are more likely to come out of those situations in a better state. And so one, as we said, we mentioned this, managing anxiety with paced breathing, right? Breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, inhale slowly and deeply until your lungs are fully inflated. And then you exhale just as slowly, right? Until your lungs are empty all the way. We want to resist thinking traps, right? Black and white thinking, assuming everything is perfect and wonderful, or on the other hand, everything is terrible, right? I'm a glass half full type of person. I'll tell you, sometimes I annoy people with that. But I will find a positive in any situation. And for me personally, right, that gives me, the hope, right. And even the energy to, right, persist, right. Even when things are going tough, right, I will find that sort of glass half full situation. It's not black or white, right. Catastrophic thinking can be very detrimental. So expecting the worst possible outcome, right. Believing that you won't cope if that outcome occurs. This goes back to that challenge versus threat philosophy, right? And a threat scenario, when you look at things as a threat to yourself, that's that catastrophic thinking, is that I cannot surmount this or overcome this challenge before me, right? Predicting the future, imagining you know what will happen right far into the future. For instance, you know, saying that you won't be able to accomplish the goal that you set out to do, that too can be detrimental. So we need to resist those thinking traps. Another thing that is very, very helpful and can really help us is keeping a gratitude journal. I think this goes back to sort of that glass half full, right? There's certain things right now, as challenging and as much work as I have before me, to know that I am fortunate to be in the position to move, right? To a place that we desire to be, myself and my family, to have that opportunity to be able-bodied enough to pack boxes and pick them up and bring them to the living room. Being grateful for those little things, and to be able to afford, right, movers. I'm not even in terms of moving it myself, yeah, little things like that.
I'd be glad that you're not moving in the middle of the summer heat too.
Exactly. Those things, right? Keeping it, having that gratitude, and actually it's been shown that writing these things down, right, can really help change how we sort of see what is happening around us. I can tell you, in terms of the pandemic, and this was at the outset of everything, right, I was in a pretty difficult situation. I was isolated from my family, myself and my mentor, Rob Gore. We were in the midst of a seemingly insurmountable challenge with the amount of patients coming in, how sick they were, the potential for us getting sick. You know, in terms of looking at that, right, challenge versus threat, we looked at it as a challenge, right? We were there. And one thing that I was grateful for is, like, you know, I trained to be an emergency physician. I am grateful to be in this position at this time, right, in that space in New York City when things were going down in the spring of 2020. I was grateful to be in that position to be able to respond, right? A whole different way of looking at things that really helped get us through that period, and me personally get myself through that period. And then also engaging in behavioral activation, right? So our thoughts and feelings, creative projects like painting, drawing, even doing jigsaw puzzles can, right, be that activation, that engaging behavioral activation. Creating this podcast week in, week out, right, especially during the in the midst of the pandemic, at the outset of things, trying to get good information out there, trying to learn for myself and my family on how to stay safe and stay healthy during that time, right? That was that behavioral activation. It could be on a level of mastery, so learning a new skill, right, that can give you a sense of empowerment. You can also do this from a sensory perspective. You might create a self-soothing kit to, right, to help you turn down the intensity of the anxiety and the emotions that you're experiencing. It could even be physical. And we talk about that week after week on Health in Harlem, getting out there, being physically active, right? And it does not have to be running 1,000 miles like Maurice Selby is trying to do this year. It could be walking 1,000 miles. It could be dancing for 100 hours, right, in a month, whatever it is. That's a lot of dancing, actually. 100 hours,
yeah,
over 2 months, 3 months. I don't know, but anyway, whatever that activity is for you, yoga. I think we mentioned that at the outset of the program, right? This is the behavioral activation that can really help us build that resilience, so that we can really meet the challenges before us head on, and then come out on top. From a stress standpoint, from an emotional regulation standpoint, right? Even in our you know, most difficult times when we're feeling down and out, these are the strategies that can really help us pull through.
And one thing is that, you know, when you are doing these things such as running, dancing, yoga, or anything in between that Dr. Selby mentioned, you don't have to be necessarily good at it. You just have to enjoy it enough that it helps you calm down, right? Like, you shouldn't seek perfection in things that are just helping you improve your mental health. It's just a matter of doing it. I'd rather do something 50% well and allow it to help me in some way than not do it at all and just be stuck in the same mental state.
That's a good point. I feel like if anything, trying to do something perfectly might end up discouraging you from doing it regularly.
Facts.
Yeah, you lose the enjoyment out of it. And then how are you helping yourself calm down?
So as we begin to wrap up, no, it's all good. So as we begin to wrap up, I am curious to pose this question to you all, and I pose it to myself as well. But what would you say is the most important message that we need to take home? When we talk about heart disease and we talk about the influence of stress and really the impact of stress, our mood, anxiety, all of those things, when we talk about that in the context of heart disease, what would you say is the most important thing that we should take away from this program?
Reed, you go first.
That's a great question. I mean, like, negative things that we've discussed tonight for your health sort of have a cascading effect where stress cascades into poor cardiovascular outcomes, and that, you know, cascades into feeling hopeless and feeling, you know, each thing sort of multiplies the other, but it works just the same the other way around. Exercising, you get those endorphins, your outlook on life increases, you feel better, you feel more optimistic, all those things. So changing your behavior can really change your whole outlook and your whole mindset. But you can't, at the same time, you can't just change your behavior and then hope your outlook and mindset changes as well. You have to attack it from a holistic standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, for me, one of the things is that it's frustrating when you first start out because you have these expectations that you're going to start and all of a sudden, boom, you're going to get good at reducing your stress. These things take time. First, finding what works for you.
You become more aware of how stressed you are because the first step is realizing, you know, what triggers you. So you're like, wow, I'm way more stressed than I realized.
Yeah. So first, self-awareness. When you are in that heightened state, like how long have you been in that heightened state? What is going on around you that might be contributing to this would be the first step is self-awareness. Because if you are in a constant heightened state, how do you know? Right? Until you're aware that, oh, wait, I have been stressed out for a very, very long time. Sometimes I don't even realize when I'm super stressed out because I'm just constantly at like stressed out level. And this is something that happens when you know you're trying to get your life in order during a pandemic. But that's besides the point. Once you realize you're stressed out, then it's a matter of going through the process of actively finding a few things that you enjoy and seeing how you can incorporate them and really look within yourself. Did this help me reduce my stress? And if so, how can I incorporate this in my life? And it again, the process of finding things that you know work well for you is frustrating. And it can be very, it's like a frustration within yourself, right? Because you're just expecting things to just work. Okay, I did it. Where's my reduced stress level? Like, am I reducing my stress? So having patience with yourself is also very important when really going through this process. Because you've been, if you're chronically stressed out, you've been at this state for a very long time, it's not as simple as, and that's it. You're out of that state. So have patience.
And I think the thing that I would say is probably most important is that not only being aware of the impact that our mental states have right on our cardiovascular health, but also being empowered by that information. Because once we know, right, that, hey, this could be, you know, maybe, and I catch myself doing this, sometimes I'm like, in trying to do things to maintain my heart health, right? I get stressed out over it. It's like, man, I didn't work out today. Oh man, I gotta, you know, I'm trying to
get my three servings of fruit this week.
Yeah, or just going, but then that's counterproductive. It's like, no, relax. You're human, right? There's sometimes we're not going to be able to exercise every day. And so as Anastasia said, like, it's really just giving ourselves a break, right? And being empowered to implement strategies where we can mitigate this stress that we deal with day in, day out. Sometimes it might be simple as we got to tune out, right? I think one of the major drivers behind a lot of the stress that we're experiencing collectively in our society is this constant 24-hour news cycle, right? And the pings from our phones, our emails, social media. And so one of the great strategies is just, hey, I need to pull back from that stuff. And there's times where you can't reach Maurice Selby because I've tuned out, right? There's times where you have to pull yourself back from the news cycle, from the social media, so that you can really, right, as we said, reflect on yourself, how you're responding to this, and really what your strategy is going to be going forward in facing the world. I think that's something that we really ought to all give ourselves the opportunity to do as we go forward. So be empowered, ladies and gentlemen.
Block it in your schedule.
Got this. Yeah.
Me time. No, put it on your calendar. Yep. Put it on your calendar. Two hours.
Possible.
Boom. Do not disturb. No, but Dr. Selby is right. Sometimes it is a matter of just tuning out and regrouping, right? For me, it's like being in the having a stressful lifestyle where you're constantly working, constantly having 5 million responsibilities and everything in between, sometimes I just have to regroup because I think of stress as like something I'm fighting against, right? I'm always trying to reduce it. I'm always trying to beat it. So sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to take a step back and withdraw from the war, quote unquote, that you're having with stress just so that you can better fight it off in the future.
And with that
you
said,
you might have to lose a battle to win a war.
Exactly. We got it. Well,
I can't lose this battle tonight, though. so I got to... Now we got to have this stuff packed. Well, thank God we're not done. Our lease isn't done until next week. So we got some time, right? Built in for, I don't want to say failure, but yeah. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in, for taking time out to listen to our conversation, to reflect with us. And really, we also thank you in advance for sharing anything that you have learned on this program. We thank you in advance for that because we truly think that it can help somebody in your life. Family member, friend, colleague, that stressed out colleague that makes you stressed at work. Send this to them. Let them listen to it so that they can, right, help. We can help them manage their emotions, their stress response. They can see things as a challenge and therefore stop stressing you out and contributing to heart disease. Anyway, long story short, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Reed and Anastasia for joining me tonight. We all getting ready for tomorrow. The challenges before us, but I think this was very, very important in getting this done and talking about this topic. So I thank you both. Also want to send a shout out to the rest of the Health in Harlem team, Giorgio Maluth, Michael Holmes, really just the rest of the team. We just shout you all out. Mia, anybody else that I am forgetting, I apologize for that. Ashley, yes. Ashley. Yes.
Zach.
Zach, Ben Suferi. So the whole team, the whole squad, we shout you all out. We also want to thank
Amani.
Oh, yeah, Amani. Yeah. She's in bed right now. That girl needs to go to sleep. But also shout out to Angela Harden, the general manager of WHCR, and also Tina Dixon, the production manager, and the rest of the WHCR family and listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, each and every week, this show is dedicated to the memory of Miss Gloria Thomas. Harlem, take care of yourself.